morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So today, today I want to talk about not knowing. I've been thinking about not knowing, which is kind of interesting. Thinking about not knowing, because when we think, we're engaged in some kind of knowing. Yeah, we want to know. And I've been thinking about not knowing and how we can colonize our reality with ideas. So we want to know, right? We have this desire to know, which is a good thing. I was looking at the images they're getting from Jupiter. You know, they've sent a satellite, you know, whatever they call that, that's going to orbit Jupiter. And they want to know, right? People want to know what is that big red eye? What's happening on the poles of Jupiter? We've never had pictures of that. We don't know so much. You know, we take pictures from the outside, but we don't know what the inner workings of Jupiter are. We want to know. And this is not, it's not a bad thing to want to know. We want to know facts, and we negotiate our world with knowledge. But we have to remember that along with the many things that we know, knowing places limits on us. Especially when we mistake our knowing for the thing itself. Right? So, if we think of the field of our experience as vast, knowing is one dimension of that field. It's not the field. It's what we know about the field of our experience. So I could say I know a person or a place. I know how to get from the Zendo to home. And that's a good thing. And back again. I know the path along East Cliff. I know how to get there. I know how to walk along it. I know kind of which houses are where on the path and how it goes. But if I limited my experience to just what I know of that path, for example, I'd miss the heart of the matter. I'd leave behind my ability to realize something as I walked the path. I'd shrink my vision and my experience down to what I know. So we don't turn away from knowing when we talk about not knowing. We don't tell ourselves that we shouldn't know or we don't know, or that's not what we're talking about. I know that my friend is a poet and loves her cat. Right? But that's not all she is. If I think I know her, every time I meet her, I'll put her in a box and say, oh yeah, you're this. But when I actually engage her as this unique being, then I can be surprised. So the not-knowing mind, what Dogen Zenji calls fu'e, is this curiosity, this willingness to be surprised. So with this spirit, I don't narrow my view, and I'm willing to be changed by my experience. I'm willing to be transformed. I'm willing to have something touch me. I'm willing to be taught, by reality, beyond my imaginings of something. There's a limit to our knowing. There's a limit to our imaginings. So what we want when we articulate the spirit of not knowing, what we're saying is we're kind of having a sense of perspective and a sense of humor about what we know. And we know that the vastness of reality is far beyond that. We know that we are a part of reality. We are an enactment of reality. So what we know is only a description. The spirit of Fu'e is a kind of resting. I've been thinking about rest too, because Shinshu and I are taking a month away from the Zendo. A whole month. Now, I have other work to do, and you know, but actually, there's going to be 2 weeks, 2 whole weeks, where I don't have anything scheduled. I'm not going to Berkeley, I'm not coming here, I'm not doing anything. And it's been really interesting to just say no to those, for anything, for those 2 weeks. You know, my boss says, well, which of these 2 days can you come to this meeting? And I have to write back and say, neither. So I've been thinking about what is it, rest? Rest is not just stopping working, is it? Rest has this quality of not knowing about it, about a willingness to allow ourselves to be touched. True rest isn't in opposition to work. If that were true, or activity, right? If that were true, then rest would simply be catatonic. You know? Just be like turning a machine off or something. But real rest can be activity, can be flow from a kind of stillness, right? And we miss that when we are caught up in our knowing and our ideas and our, you know. So the not knowing has a spirit of rest about it, has a spirit of curiosity, this deep rest. So when we think about this, we come back to the fact that this relationship of knowing and activity is central to our practice. Our relationship to knowledge is central to our practice. So Dogen says in Genjo Koan, do not suppose that what you realize becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your consciousness. Although actualized immediately, the inconceivable may not be apparent. Its appearance is beyond your knowledge. Don't, you know, we cast a net into reality and we come up with some things. And then we say, oh, that's reality, right? What I've caught in my net is it. But mostly things flow through the net. And conversely, what we realize as we move through our days, what we enact, what we are, isn't grasped by our consciousness. It's not something that we can nail down and capture with our ideas. Dogen's saying, you know, step out beyond that and be still and receive reality. Enact reality. Don't freeze it into your ideas. It's okay to have ideas. It's okay to know. Fine. But that's only a dimension of this. He says, when Buddhas are truly Buddhas, they do not necessarily know that they are Buddhas. However, they are actualized Buddhas who go on actualizing Buddhas. So this dimension of knowledge is the sense of grasping. So then we can say, well, how do we do this? Okay, that's great, but how do you do this? How do you actually enact not knowing? We do it in very concrete ways. We do it by the way we greet somebody, by the way we take a moment of appreciation, an openness, a willingness. When we let go of our preconceived notions about a person or a place or a thing, when we allow it to teach us what it is, when we accept the mystery of another being, when we let go of our attachment to knowing, to taste that clinging, that anxiety, that I gotta know, I gotta control, I gotta, you know? When we can taste that, we can say, okay, that's operating in reality. That's another dimension operating in reality. But I don't have to be hijacked by it. I can broaden my base a little bit. Rest in something greater than that. So we can have, you know, confidence in what we know. In any given moment, we can act, we can participate, we can give what we know to the world. You know, we need to do that, right? We just don't go to war with reality. I know this. And you don't often, right? So there's a fluidity to knowing in that way. Knowing arises out of not knowing and passes away into not knowing. So I know something in this moment. Okay. I make my contribution. We say, not knowing is most intimate. Not knowing is most intimate. In other words, I'm not placing my knowing between me and you. I'm allowing that kind of contact. Last night, Shinshu and I went to an exhibit called The Fool's Journey. And a friend of a friend had a painting in the exhibit. Is it Blitzer Gallery? And the practice of these paintings was this group of these people have been studying something together, and the way they did the paintings was they had these big black really thick paper, and they've been in this class together studying this text for like 5 years. And so they would study together, and then they would go to these paintings with some gesso on them, right? And they would have their acrylic paint there, and they would just start painting. You know, they would just stand there and paint their understanding. This was this particular one was a tarot deck, right? So there was the different tarot cards, and some of them are clearly very skilled artists. And some of them weren't such skilled artists, right? Some of the paintings were just like really very skilled. But there was something about the immediacy of this. You could feel the immediacy of this person putting up their understanding on the wall. So one way to do this would be to go through, and we were talking to friends, and oh, I like this one, this is my favorite, one that I really liked, and these two trees, and then these gold leaves floating between them, right? It's very cool. But the immediacy of the painting wasn't about likes or dislikes. The immediacy of the painting was this person's, or critique of the technique, or all that, you know. The immediacy of the painting was the reality of this person that put this thing on the wall. So you might gain a greater appreciation of the painting by knowing something about painting techniques. because some of them were clearly, you know, so skillfully. So you might actually appreciate this thing more, enjoy it more, become more intimate with it by knowing something about how it's done, right? But you could also throw a big barrier between yourself and the painting by just critiquing it, by knowing something. You see, same with music or anything. Oh, I know how that's done. That can improve your appreciation and your connection, but it can also cause a barrier. So we have to, knowing is a very powerful tool, very powerful tool, and we have to be careful how we use it and how we relate to it. So one of the ways that we can think about not knowing is to investigate how we enter darkness. Darkness is, you know, we can't see very well. In animal kingdom, we're not very, we don't have a very high acuity in terms of our vision, especially at night. We can't see very well. If you've ever been somewhere where there's no electricity and there's also no moon, it's really, really dark. I mean, seriously dark. The first time I was someplace like that, I just had never appreciated darkness quite so much. And that starlight is an actual thing. Starlight, actually, it's real, but we can't see it with all this ambient light. So to enter into darkness is to enter into a kind of vulnerability and not knowing. We can't see our way so clearly. We have to feel our way. I happen to love the poet Wendell Berry. Are you familiar with Wendell Berry? Anybody not familiar with Wendell Berry? Yeah, okay. So Wendell Berry is he's a farmer and a writer and a professor. And much of what he writes has to do with his relationship with the natural world and with being a farmer. So I thought I'd share with you a few of the works that Wendell Berry has written about darkness. This first one, To Know the Dark. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark. Go without sight, and find that the dark too blooms and sings, and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. You want to hear it again? Mm-hmm. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark. Go without sight, and find that the dark too blooms and sings, and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. So we might say to go into the not knowing with knowing is to know knowing. We go into not knowing and we grasp what we know, and then we say, oh, that's not knowing, or that's participation. No, we have to go into the dark. And this can be scary and vulnerable and confusing. We have to go into the dark. We have to go dark, he says, not just go into the dark. We have to go dark. What does it mean to go dark? There's a kind of trust in that, a kind of willingness, a kind of renunciation to go dark. When we sit zazen, in a sense, we go dark. Even when our minds are busy, you know, we're going dark. We go without sight and find that the dark too blooms and sings. that the dark, that not knowing, that reality itself is not dependent upon our knowing. It's not dependent, not caught by our light. It is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. So he's teaching us something about how we practice here, about how to actually, you know, we hear this with the ear of the heart, we hear this with our intuition, our bodies know something about this. We listen to this and it impinges upon us, inspires us. So this next section I want to read you is a part of a longer poem called Song in a Year of Catastrophe. Then the voice following me said, "You have not yet come close enough. Come nearer the ground. Learn from the woodcock in the woods, whose feathering is a ritual of the fallen leaves, and from the nesting quail, whose speckling makes her hard to see in the long grass. Study the coat of the mole, for the farmer shall wear the furrows and the greenery of his fields and bear the long standing of the woods." And I asked, "You mean death, then?" "Yes," the voice said. "Die into what the earth requires of you." I let go of all holds then and sank like a hopeless swimmer into the earth, and at last came fully into the ease and the joy of that place, all my lost ones returning. So let me read that last paragraph, that last stanza. And I asked, "You mean death then?" "Yes," the voice said. "Die into what the earth requires of you." I let go all holds then and sank like a hopeless swimmer into the earth, and at last came fully into the ease and the joy of that place, all my lost ones returning. So to die into what the earth requires of you is to let go and move into your life completely. This life, this moment, this place. This place. Not in an abstract way, but this place. To sink into this place like a hopeless swimmer. In the sense of not trying to flail and create this self that we have to do. Gotta keep going. To let go of that for a moment at least and sink into this earth, this moment. And at last come fully into the ease and the joy of that place, all my lost ones returning. That place, which is this moment. It is concrete. There's something very, one of the things I love about his work is it is very concrete. It's about digging in the earth and plants and woods, and it's very much about be in this place right now. One more. This is called Woods. I part the outthrusting branches and come in beneath the blessed and blessing trees. Though I am silent, there is singing around me. Though I am dark, there is vision around me. Though I am heavy, there is flight around me. I part the outthrusting branches and come in beneath the blessed and blessing trees. To me, this is a sense of coming to rest, right? Though I am silent, there is singing around me. Though I am dark, there is vision around me. Though I am heavy, there is flight around me. This is taking our place. It's what I think this morning, anyway, about this poem. This is taking our place in the dynamic world, right? Finding our place as a part of things. There is vision around me. There is flight around me. There is activity. I'm a part of that. And I'll leave you with one more. This is called The Law That Marries All Things. Now, remember, the Dharma is the law, right? The law, not like, you will do this and not that, but the law in the sense of describing the nature of reality. The cloud is free only to go with the wind. The rain is free only in falling. The water is free only in its gathering together, in its downward courses, in its rising into air. In law is rest. If you love the law, if you enter singing into it as water in its descent. Or song is truest law, and you must enter singing. It has no other entrance. It is the great chorus of parts. The only outlawry is in division. Whatever is singing is found awaiting the return of whatever is lost. Meet us in the air, over the water, sing the swallows. Meet me, the redbird sings. Here, 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 here. Isn't that beautiful? Okay, here we go again. Think about this as a description of your practice. Think about this as the way we find our way day by day. Remember, he's a farmer. He goes out every morning into a cold barn and he digs the earth. He's a practical man. The cloud is free only to go with the wind. The rain is free only in falling. The water is free only in its gathering together, in its downward courses, in its rising into the air. In law is rest, if you love the law. If you enter singing into it as water in its descent. Or song is truest law, and you must enter singing as it has no other entrance. It is the great chorus of parts. The only outlawry is in division. Whatever is singing is found awaiting the return of whatever is lost. Meet us in the air. Over the water, sing the swallows. Meet me, the redbird sings. Here, 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 here. So when we consider this poem in terms of our practice, at the first he says, the cloud is free only to go with the wind, the rain is free only in falling, the water is free only in its gathering together and its downward courses and its rising up. This is the natural law of things, right? This is what water does. It gathers together and rises up. The cloud floats according to the wind. The rain falls. That's what rain does. It doesn't decide partway down to go back up. That's the nature of rain, is to fall. The nature of cloud is to go with the wind. The nature of water is to come together and rise up. In this law is rest. If you love the law, this is just such a powerful statement. What do we love in our lives? What do we place in the center? What do we devote ourselves to? What matters most? That's what we love, right? I think it's in the Jesus says that where your treasure is, you will find your heart also, something like that. So what we what we spend our lives for, what we spend time and money and energy and all that on, is what we love. And that can take many forms. In the law is rest, if you love the law. So love the law means if I follow it as a good disciple, if I engage in it. If you enter singing into it as water in its descent, if you engage in your life in this way, which is not knowing, which is rest, right? The rain doesn't have to work hard to fall. Doesn't have to say, you know, better go to work now. You've got to get down there to earth as quickly as possible. It just does what it does. So when we study this law in this way, there is a quality of rest and a quality of engagement that has a kind of naturalness to it. In law is rest, if you love the law. And this also is about a kind of knowledge. The rain, in a sense, knows how to fall. It doesn't have to study. It doesn't have to go to school to know how to fall. It knows. It's what it does. So what is that about our lives that we can return to? That knows its place. Song is truest law, and you must enter singing as it has no other entrance. So there's some joy in this, right? Some individuality and harmony. Harmony is not about all the sounds being the same. It's about all of the different sounds coming together, right? Each unique voice coming together with all the others. It is the great chorus of parts, the only outlawry, that's a hard word, the only outlawry is in division. So, we look at rain and there's individual raindrops, right? There is division. The cloud is not the wind, and yet it is not apart from the wind. Water is separate, and yet it comes together. So, of course, there's division. But what he's speaking about here, I think, is the kind of divisiveness that causes us to believe that division is the ultimate. The great chorus of parts contains parts. But in the sense of darkness and not knowing and rest, we can appreciate those parts and enact those parts in our own life. Whatever is singing is found, awaiting the return of whatever is lost. Meet us in the air, over the water sing the swallows. Meet me, the redbird sings. Here, here, here. Here, here, here. So this is our practice, right? Here, here, here. Not someplace else. Here, here. Here, here is where we find rest, where we find not knowing, where we become intimate in the sense of not knowing. Where we let go of the abstractions that cause us to separate ourselves from reality. Where we find some appreciation for things as they are. Or, as Suzuki Roshi is quoted, things as they is. Things as they are. And this is a kind of diving in, kind of entry. Suzuki Roshi once wrote that when we dive in to our practice, it's like a basket entering the water. Right? What's inside and what's outside? They're completely leaky with reality. And I think this is the spirit of what Wanda Berry is talking about. This willingness to allow, this willingness to enter darkness, this willingness to enter not knowing, this willingness to be alive as a part, and to know what we know provisionally, to not be attached to controlling reality, but to actually engage in a sense of curiosity and mutuality. That, I think, is where we find rest. Thank you.